Hello, I am Chessa Peter. I usually work behind the scenes at the pod class, but right now our lovely hosts, Jamie and Elizabeth, are enjoying spring break, so I am coming at you from our EverActive Schools studio. Welcome back to the pod class. We've got some fresh episodes in the works, but for today, we're shaking things up and doing something a little different. We're sharing an awesome episode from our friends at Physical Education and Health Canada. PAT, as they are commonly known, just launched their podcast in January. The PAT Canada podcast spotlights guests and topics relevant to phys ed and health spaces. We are featuring their most recent episode, All Gender, Physical Education, and Health, with equity and inclusion consultant Andrea Barrow from Limestone District School Board in Ontario. Politics and leadership shape and reshape our conversations, policies, and practices in education, and in turn impact our school spaces and the students and staff within them. Across borders and beyond political priorities, we encourage educators to continue to do the important work of relationship building, creating safe spaces for all students, and amplifying voices around the importance of equity, diversity, and inclusion in schools. For this reason, we are glad to be highlighting PHE's new podcast and this episode in particular. We'll be back next month with a brand new episode, so keep your notifications on and your ears peeled for that. Also, as we gear up for Teacher Appreciation Week in May, we want to hear from you. We're collecting audio messages sharing your favorite teacher stories. Send a heartfelt message or share a memorable story about a teacher who has made a difference in your life. Head over to our podclass webpage at everactive.org/podclass or follow us on social media to find out how to submit your recorded audio. Thanks for tuning in. Let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome, educators and champions of physical and health education.
Today, we're joined by equity and inclusion consultant of Limestone District School Board, Andrea Barrow. Andrea's role includes providing instructional and coaching support for classrooms in response to issues of human rights, equity and inclusion, as well as building educator awareness for positive and culturally responsive learning environments. Thanks for joining us today, Andrea.
As we begin this episode, we want to recognize that we are situated on the ancestral lands of the Algonquin people. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and commit to learning from their rich cultural heritage. Starting off, Andrea, could you share a little bit about, you know, your background and how you got into the role that you have today and a little bit about yourself as an educator?
Absolutely. So thank you for having me today. I've been an educator in the Limestone District School Board located in Kingston for the past 14 to 15 years, primarily working in the phys ed department and social science, teaching a number of senior social science classes, but more so in the past couple of years, I've been the equity and inclusion consultant with the school board in the secondary panel. And in this role, I provide curriculum and classroom support to educators regarding mostly around human rights, also consult and work alongside with administrators to develop and implement site-specific plans to dismantle a number of different human rights violations, such as like anti-Black racism, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, homophobia, transphobia, just to name a few. Depending on what is arising within that site, then we work to help provide the education piece there as well. I work with the student affinity groups across the board, so across the board, GSA groups, Black and racialized students. And I'm also an ambassador probably for the past 8 years with OFEA and a member of the Ontario Physical Activity Safety Standards in Education with OFEA.
Well, that's quite the quite the description. Yes.
It keeps me busy.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you. And where do you feel that your appetite to, you know, go into this field within education came from?
Interesting question in terms of, because it's always a big jump to leave the classroom in terms of what you know and that direct relationship one-on-one with the students that you have in front of you to go into a sort of consulting position at the board office. But it became a little bit easier as I started to see some of the things that were arising and recognizing that in the position that I'm currently in now, that I could impact more students and more educators moving forward. Also as a mother with, you know, one daughter that had gone through the system and two that are still in the system as well, trying to make sure that it's a safer environment for them and their peers, and recognizing that there are a lot of students that we have that are really struggling to be in our school environment. You know, we want, as educators, we get into the profession because we're lifelong learners, we're passionate about learning. We've always, most of us have had a very positive school experience. So coming to realize that that was not the case for everybody and taking a look in terms of like, what could I do as an educator to sort of turn that narrative around and help support not only our staff, but our students as well.
So you talk about kind of a personal experience, but also a professional experience that landed you to this. And today's conversation is all around all gendered physical education, and specifically, again, using the Limestone District School Board as an example. But how did this come about, and within the conversations with you and the people you work with? And, you know, why is all gendered physical education at the forefront of what you and your colleagues are trying to do?
It's interesting and it's challenging, where we tend to be a lot of educators sort of, I don't know if I want to say stuck in our ways, but we know what we know. But we also have to keep in mind that what we know as a phys ed teacher is probably more so that we have played a lot of competitive sports prior to being entering the education field. And that our experience, as I mentioned before, is not the same as the students are in front of us. So when I look back more recently within the past few years with some of the students that were in our classes, and whether they be, you know, non-binary, gender non-conforming, trans student, not having an adequate space for them, not adjusting and adapting. So we adjust and adapt to other students that are in the space to make sure that they have an opportunity to participate fully. But there's a whole group of students that are not feeling safe to be in that space. And then the solution sometimes, unfortunately, is they don't take it. They don't take phys ed, or they take it as sort of a correspondence package or an online course. So they're not getting the true experience. So recognizing that there's a group of kids, like, they have the right. We all have a right to an education, and they have a right to an education that also includes a physical health and physical activity. So by moving and shifting towards offering all gendered spaces, and this is something that we offer from grades 1 to 8 already. So more so in our school board and some other school boards, a lot of school boards, we would offer gendered phys ed. So all girls or all boys. So it's a shift in terms of how we deliver things, and also a shift in the mindset for staff in terms of shifting away from what they've traditionally taught as well, a little bit as well, to be a little bit more accommodating. Like I said, we accommodate for many other different things as well, culturally, medical conditions. This is who the students are. This is part of their identity, and we need to bring them into the space. And it also helps to create a sense of acceptance when everybody's included in it as well. So there was a number of things, and it's still a work in progress. We still have a lot of work in terms of things like change rooms and finding an adequate space. You know, we've sort of recently discovered that even though we may say we have a space or an all-gendered bathroom, is it accessible? Meaning, like, can they use that space when they need to use the space? Do they have to get a key for it? Is it a shared space? Sometimes we have a space on one end of the building that's not close to the gyms or classrooms. It's being shared with school to community. It's shared with staff. They have to wait. So there's a lot of different factors that we have to look at to make that adjustment as well. But the conversations are starting. The teachers are asking, and they recognize that it's time to make that shift.
So providing the listener a little bit of context, within your own school district, have you moved away from gendered physical education, so all girls and all boys, to completely all gendered physical education? Or is there some sort of shift going on where they're still offering all girls, all boys, and all gendered physical education?
So it really depends on the size of the school. So being here in Kingston in the Limestone District School Board, we are a small school board, but we do cover a large geography. You know, we have schools that are almost an hour and a half north from where our board office is. So we cover a great distance. So those schools tend to be quite a bit smaller, and even some that are in town as well. So what we have done is that starting this past September, so this school year, we've asked that all schools offer at least one section in each grade of all gendered phys ed. So one section. So they can still offer the boys and girls that they've offered before, but they have to offer that all gendered section. And if there isn't enough students in that all gendered section, then they can take a look and see, okay, what can we do to pull from the other sections as well? What we've been finding is that some of our other schools, our smaller schools, have always done all gendered. They've never separated out because they don't have the numbers to do so. We expected and anticipated that some schools it would be a timetable challenge. And I haven't really necessarily heard that. It's more so that some schools just said, you know what, we're going all gendered. We're not offering boys and girls. So then that's been in one school, whereas other schools have offered all three. So it's interesting because I hear feedback from my own kids and their friends, because I'm always carpooling to different activities and sports in terms of their take on it and their experience. And, you know, some of the girls that are in the all girls class are loving it. And then the other students that are in all gendered are loving it as well. So we gave them the option that they could still offer those classes.
So I think naturally, you know, one of the first thoughts is there's going to be challenges in the movement of this. If you're offering gendered physical education and moving towards an all gendered physical education, that transition is going to be challenging, be it for offering it for the students, or we think parents, administrators, kind of the structure of the school. So can you share any challenges and how you've overcome that as a school district in that transition for those bigger schools?
So it's been interesting because we're only a few months in, and we were presented with more questions back in May and June when we were starting to develop this and announce, or actually back into second semester last year, because we had to put things in writing and in place and notify people earlier so that when students were making their course selections back in February of last year, they were aware of it. So we had a lot of questions coming more so from staff. We have provided some PD sessions for staff as well to make that. So we haven't had a lot of pushback. People, like I said before, are really recognizing that it's overdue and that it's time, and there's lots of documentation to support that as well. We maybe have had some teachers question in terms of how do they do things in terms of health, because they've only ever taught boys, grade 9 boys, phys ed, and they've only ever taught health to just the boys. So some schools have been sort of a little creative in terms of who's been assigned to certain classes. And what I was expecting was maybe some separation when it came to teaching health, that they would still traditionally go to boys and girls. But that does not seem to be the case from what my kids have been reporting. It's been great in terms of what they're coming home and having discussions with me in terms of what they're doing. And the teachers are, when they're doing health and they're doing group work together, go with a group that you're comfortable with, as opposed to necessarily assigning them. So knowing the students in the space, haven't heard anything back from parents. Because like, again, keeping in mind when we initially brought this up with the superintendents and having a discussion, most of the superintendents in our board are actually elementary teachers and weren't necessarily even aware that we had this separation going on in grade 9. So it's just sort of a natural progression in terms of what the students have always been presented. So the boy, girl, the binary option is new to students when they're coming out of grade 8. So if you're offering them to continue in with all gender, that's what they've known before. And that's what the parents have known for before. We do have sometimes questions from families in terms of cultural differences and religious accommodations, sort of the one-off. And then we refer back to our policy and put things in place and work with the family and work with the classroom teacher and move forward as well.
So I think one thing that I'm picking up from how you were explaining it is this isn't a structured thing with the walls built around it is this way or the highway. There's ways to accommodate and work with not only the teachers, but mostly the students and making those accommodations. But within that, what have you seen or heard of around the positive impacts of offering the all-gendered physical education, physical and health education?
And there's a lot of research in terms of the positive interactions. You know, like we're only 2 or 3 months into making this change. So I have not heard anything negative. I think it's just more so a shift, a pedagogical shift for the educators, which they have taken on and have been doing an amazing job. So they're, you know, reaching out for additional resources, looking to bring in guest speakers, making the spaces accommodating, because these are things that we've been doing as a board over the past several years anyways, in terms of looking at all gendered spaces, in terms of change rooms, and now looking at, or for bathrooms, and now looking for change rooms as well. So like I said, if the kids are accustomed to and used to being in spaces with all students, it just moves forward in that direction as well. So, you know, we'll continue to find support. There's different tools and organizations out there. We'll continue to reach out and find support and find additional opportunities to train our staff in terms of PD for them, because that's what they want. But I think moving forward, I'm hoping that we'll start to see less students not taking phys ed and taking, and instead taking that online course. We'll have to take a look at the numbers to see, because being a phys ed teacher, being a fitness instructor, personal trainer, I'm I want all kids to have that same energy and passion that I have for movement. But it just ached my heart to find out that someone was not taking a class, not because of a physical limitation, but in terms of how they were feeling in the space and that we were not accommodating and adjusting to having them in that space.
Carrying on with that theme around the accommodation, many of our listeners may think, okay, we offer an all-gendered physical education in my school, but I'm wondering how I create a supportive and inclusive environment and what that, you know, structural environment looks like. Like, I know you've mentioned the change rooms and washrooms. Could you expand on some of the things that you're trying to implement within the school board around how to support and how to allow people to feel included, not just in the class itself, but in the space?
Excellent question. So going back to things like pronouns in any space, right? So any classroom space, and then making sure that we're moving away from in a phys ed class, you know, ladies, boys, doing boys versus girls. That's not inclusive, right? Because now you're forcing students to pick a side. And when they don't see themselves in either of those spaces, it becomes problematic. So the language that we use within that space. So this is something that I've had to, you know, unlearn and relearn as well in terms of, you know, speaking to when I coach other teams in terms of referring to everybody as athletes. So it could be listed on paper as the girls volleyball team, but I'm referring to them as athletes, as players, as folks. Like, so the language that we use in the space and the games that we play and how we play the games as well, and how we divide out the students when we're looking to build and create teams and keeping an eye on the competitive level. So you need to have that relationship and know who is in your space to know who is going to work better in a team environment and which groups that they can work well with and not, just like we would with any other sport or any activity that we're doing in the phys ed space as well. Another area that in terms of having to make change is accepting the clothing that the students are coming to the gym with. Right. So you talked about, you know, meeting them where they're at. And we've been saying that for a long time now. So we truly do need to meet the students where they're at. So we're recognizing that we don't want to put extra barriers on students that to conform and have a certain type of phys ed clothing. If they're coming in and they have appropriate footwear that we deem as being safe, right, under the safety guidelines or the standards with OFEA, we've really pulled back on that and saying, like, they don't have to have athletic clothing. If they want to come in with the clothes that they're wearing on a day-to-day basis and what they classify as streetwear or regular wear, that's okay. That is completely fine. Again, that's another barrier. But again, as phys ed teachers, we walk into the space dressed a certain way and expect everyone else to be dressed that way as well. And that does not need to be the case. We need to be accepting and meet them where they're at and take away that barrier as well.
Just to probe a little more on that clothing and the cultural aspects of the clothing, do you have any advice around the kind of making sure students feel safe and welcomed when, whether they have to wear a hijab or whatever clothing that might be within a physical education space?
We've actually worked with some community leaders and created a document in terms of a hijab in the educational spaces and more specifically as well in terms of the phys ed space. I feel that more students and staff, it's becoming the norm. Right. So there's no questioning of it. It's fully accepted, recognizing that we do need to make that shift. And I think as a board, we've made that shift a few years ago. So we have many students. We have some schools where we have a lot of newcomer families. And, you know, given the fact that Kingston's not very diverse, we do have some buildings that are very diverse. And you have a large number of students that are wearing hijabs and are participating in phys ed and playing on school teams. So they don't appear to be the one-off anymore to see them on a soccer pitch or on a volleyball court. It is, you know, becoming normalized, which is great. And kids aren't questioning or asking. Officials aren't questioning or asking. It's just what it is, which it's great to see as well.
One thing I keep coming back to is the educator meeting the student where they're at and kind of having those conversations and building that relationship. And I think one thing that as PhD Canada, we've had many conversations around is kind of a Western approach to physical education of it's competitive and you want to win. And it's, you know, usually basketball and volleyball and soccer and, you know, these team sports. Do you find there could be, if we shift away and have a different approach to physical education, that could also change the landscape for students in how they view physical education?
Absolutely. We've been trying to do more work over the past few years, even through OFEA, in terms of how the breakdown of the games, right? So teaching games for understanding, breaking it down in terms of target games, striking games, as opposed to what we've traditionally done, where it's been, we're doing volleyball for the whole week, right? And the nets are set up for the whole week and every single class is doing volleyball. We're taking a step back. So we're taking a step back and, you know, we're doing net games and a variety of different games. So it makes it the entry point, multiple entry points, so that you don't have an athlete entering there that plays at a higher club level, exceeding, they can still exceed and excel, but maybe they're helping out a little bit more, as opposed to a student who's only ever played, you know, elementary volleyball, but still loves the sport. So we try to make sure that we have multiple entry points and that you sort of even out the playing field by having different games that are not familiar to the majority of the students that are in the space, to make the space a little bit more inclusive. The hard thing to wrap my head around, even when I first went into teaching as a phys ed teacher, coming out of playing competitive sports all through my teen years and into my early 20s, being a very competitive person, is recognizing that not everybody has a love of the games and the sports in the same manner. So how do I take a step back and meet them where they're at? And sometimes it is challenging because you may have a group of kids that are very competitive and very athletic, and make that entry point where everybody can kind of come in together, participate together, and have success together. And when we do that, we're creating a safer space. I never say that we create truly a safe space, because we can never guarantee that the space that we're in and that we're providing the students is deemed safe, but we can work towards creating that safer environment where it's also a sense of accountability. So accountability from the teacher and from the students towards each other as well.
Yeah, this brings me to my own experience. It was a project through PHE Canada, working with newcomer students. A school in British Columbia introduced Omnikimball, and none of the students had played that before. And one of the students, kind of the biggest takeaway of the project was, everybody was new, so nobody was good at it, so we all learned together. So like you say, it produced that level playing field where a lot of classrooms across Canada are very diverse and have people with lots of different experiences, you know, levels of athleticism more than others. You know, if you're going to go and play hockey, then you're excluding a large majority of students in classrooms. Whereas what about if we introduced a cricket game into a Canadian classroom, how those newcomer students might thrive and be able to then teach
exactly
their Canadian counterparts and shift that dynamic. Something that's interesting in the sports that we try to do, or just the activities we try to do, even moving away from sport in general and more to that, you know, activity-based, play-based.
It's about movement, right? It's about what can we do to make them physically active and want to continue to be physically active, and recognizing that not all students are comfortable in terms of being in a phys ed space and moving their body in a certain manner. So how do we break that down? So just like you said, when you bring in a game or a tool or implement that they've never seen before, it equals things out because everyone is learning at the same time. When you have a lot of newcomers in the space as well, reaching out and asking them in terms of some of the activities and games that, you know, what do you play at home? What is your family? What do you enjoy, to bring that into the space as well? That increases that inclusivity, because now they might have some more expertise in that, but now it's exposing students to something that's a little bit different. That brings in that culturally relevant, responsive pedagogy that we need to embrace, you know, and practice every single day as well.
Yeah, and I find in doing that, it builds the relationship with the student. As soon as you, you know, open up and say, you know, what is it that you would like to do? Can you show me? Can you teach me? Can you show me what this sport is or this activity is on YouTube? Let's learn it. And can you teach the class? I think that really builds that relationship and then allows you to have those further conversations around, you know, how do we make this space safer? And, you know, how do we bring the class together and everybody can understand and have that perspective as well?
Well, it's an opportunity for all students to have a voice in terms of what's being done and accomplished in the space, because quite often you get the voices of the students that are the most competitive. And you gave the example of wanting to play hockey, and that excludes a lot of other people. I remember being in high school myself, where I played basketball or I played volleyball, you know, competitively. And when we would come to phys ed and we would do that week-long activity, I was not allowed to play with my dominant hand. I had to put that behind my back, and that was the way to level it out, because the whole week was just the sport itself. So we are shifting away from, you know, it may be towards the end of the week, you play that game of volleyball, but it might be adapted and a different variation from what you would normally do. So it needs to be a shift in terms of how we've done things. I always say traditionally, right? That's how we sort of worked, what we've done in school, what we learned in university, to what we're doing in the classroom. We've got different students today, and we need to shift.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I think about my own education at university and teaching skills and that skill-based approach. And, you know, what now through my experiences with physical and health education, kind of moving away from that and being adaptive and creative. And I think one of the biggest things is that collaboration between teachers, of sharing ideas of, okay, how can I make volleyball more accessible for my students? Okay, let's use a beach ball. Let's try seated volleyball. You know, there's so many ways of adapting it, but I probably wouldn't have come up with that myself.
Yeah, there's a lot of great tools out there as well, but I think that collaborative piece is extremely important. That's the one thing we hear from teachers all the time, is that they don't have the time to meet, right? And so at working within the board office, trying to create those opportunities. So when we do a PD and we invite teachers in, sometimes building in the day, I might have a full agenda of things that I want them to do and learn about, but I need to build in some time for them just to sit around the table and have a conversation and share ideas and create the platforms where they can digitally share, electronically share ideas as well. Because somebody might have expertise in lacrosse, whereas somebody else has expertise in, you know, broom ball, or where are we reaching out to our community partners to come in and support as well?
Yeah, I think I'm going to kind of ask you to expand on that and the possibilities around the community and what that can bring into the physical education classroom, especially in and around, you know, all gender physical education, introducing newcomers into classrooms.
So yeah, the newcomers into classrooms is interesting because it depends on where they're at. Again, it comes back to that, where they're at, and if there's a language barrier, if there's other, you know, they're in an environment that's completely new, are there other accommodations that need to be considered as well? So hopefully, you know, you've gotten that information from administration before in their space as well, but that comes back in terms of that cultural relevant and responsive pedagogy that a lot of phys ed teachers have not, I don't want to speak for everybody else, but I have worked with OFIA to create some documentation to land on their webpage in terms of how do we adapt, how are we looking culturally, you know, through a different lens to be more accommodating. I don't even know if I want to say accommodating, in terms of like increasing our own knowledge to increase that inclusivity within the space as well. You've said it before in terms of reaching out if they're wanting to, and maybe sometimes having them. I've seen some great success in terms of things like, you know, cricket. You know, I don't play cricket, I didn't grow up playing cricket, but we have a lot of students that play cricket. So turning to those students to take a leadership role within the classroom as well, even if they're a newcomer student as well. So finding something to make that connection with the new faces that are in our spaces.
So then kind of bring in this full circle on the all gender physical education. You know, what role does policy and policy makers play in promoting all gendered physical education?
So another great question. Our board actually does have documentation. So we have a document that was started with Dr. Lee Ayrton a couple of years ago, and we're still working on it. So it is on our website. And I know that Dr. Ayrton frequently refers to it because I think we're one of the few boards that actually have, it's the supporting and protecting trans and or gender nonconforming students. It's a document right now, a guideline, and we are working towards making it an administrative procedure, so an AP document. And in doing so, we need to go through a few different stages in terms of review. So we are at that stage and revising things and bringing it back to Dr. Ayrton, who additionally created that. So some of the things within that documentation, we do have a section there where we have a key message in athletics. So it actually states right now that schools must ensure transgender spectrum students, including students who are non-binary, enjoy full participation in physical education classes and in team sports of their choice. This includes ensuring a safe, inclusive, welcoming, affirming, and respectful athletic environment and changing facilities. So we have specific documentation. We have a few more details within that document pertaining to athletics that would go into phys ed as well. In terms of policy, we are actually working with Dr. Ayrton and OFIA, and they're actually looking to bring to the table superintendents and directors and those that have a portfolio responsibility for phys ed, each board together with Dr. Ayrton and a few other key speakers, to take a look at what policy do you currently have in place? What policies are in place with other school boards? If you don't have a policy, what should you be including in that policy? And then looking in terms of How do you implement it, get the message out to all staff? And then how do you know that it's being successfully implemented as well at your sites moving forward? So we have that. We have within that document in terms of what schools need to do to prevent discrimination, in terms of offering gender diversity training to all athletic staff. So our October PD day, we had a school-wide, so we separated out, or board-wide, secondary and elementary. We had guest speakers, and one of them was Dr. Ayrton for both elementary and secondary. And we had EGAL presenters available as well. So we know that that's ongoing training that staff actually wants, but it is a little bit different in athletics because, again, we've got the change room facilities and clothing, and we have to consider the movement of our students as well in terms of what their comfort level is and the language that we use in that space. We need to discourage the use of gendered language in athletics, as I mentioned before, in terms of getting away from saying things like ladies and gentlemen.
As you mentioned, the work that is ongoing, but how did you come to put in these policies at the forefront of what it is you're trying to do? So the rollout of all gender physical education has happened this year. The policy and the PD is ongoing. How do you see all of this coming together to not only support teachers, but predominantly the students?
So it's been done in a few different sort of mismatched phases because I came in after this document had already been created. So it actually made it a little bit easier in terms of having the language of a document, a guideline that's going to become eventually an administrative procedure, an AP. So referring back to that. And then we've actually taken a bit the step further in terms of having, we have CASA Sports, our Kingston Athletic Secondary School Association, that feeds into EOSA, feeds into OFSA, that people would be familiar with. So even changing the language in terms of who can play on what team based on what their comfort and what they identify in terms of their true identity. So we looked at those documents as well and those procedures as well. So like I said, it's ongoing, it's fluid. I believe because I came into it after the fact, the document has been in the works for a couple of years. So started before I arrived. And then when I arrived, wanting one of the first things on the list for myself in my role was to push forward and have that discussion about all gendered phys ed. So started that early so that we could get it on, and you know, on the timetable and the course outline selection into early of last year for the selection as well. So there's a lot of different moving parts that are all starting to come together, and it's reaching out. The staff are asking for more training, but we're actually getting students asking for more education as well. So we've done a number of different surveys with our GSA groups when we bring them in board wide. I'm to the point now that we've collected their information. We have data from them from back from 2018 to 2020 to last year to 2022, 2023. Now we need to take action. And one of the things there was always in terms of how we offered phys ed. So we're moving forward and offering it in terms of all gendered phys ed. But the other thing that comes up at the top of the list for students as well is making sure that when we're teaching, say, sex ed in a health class, that we're including everybody. Because right now it's still very gendered. Some schools and some educators have been doing a beautiful job. But again, we recognize, like with anything that's new outside of our comfort area, we need to provide that training. So there are more resources and tools that we know of that are coming in the new year that we'll be able to provide our teachers. They're jumping in. They're jumping in with both feet, which has been great to see.
Yeah, I think it's a mark of the work that you're doing when the student voice and choice is at the forefront of how this is going to move forward beyond just a physical education classroom into other classrooms and to the broader school system too. You know, bringing our thoughts together and just want to give you the space to offer our listeners, you know, what does the future look like for those that may be listening and thinking, God, I'm passionate about this and I agree and I can relate to the conversation, but, you know, my administration or my school board sees things very differently. What would your message be to those folks?
My message to other boards and other educators that want to make that shift and they're hitting a wall or seeing the different barriers, continue to challenge the system. Continue the fight, right? It's going to be sometimes a bit of a battle, but there's a lot of documentation, a lot of great research out there and tools to help facilitate and have that discussion. So even in terms of the documents that PHE Canada has, in terms of flipping the script on gendered phys ed, supporting 2SLGBTQ+ inclusion in school, you know, there's a larger guidebook with it as well. EGAL has some documentation as well to refer back to in terms of inclusion in sports, the playbook to break down barriers, and then another document as well in terms of sports inclusion in Canada. Listen to the voices of your students. Most school boards have data that's been collected already from students. We need to start acting on it. So that could be a starting point in terms of what is being reported by the students within your district and what is the documentation and the data that's being reported across the country as well. So we need to flip the narrative, or as the document said, flip the script. So we need to do the work. We need to reach out to those that are going to be supportive allies. We need to recognize the intersectionality of our students and our own positionality as well, right? And recognizing that we have a lot of say and a lot of power in terms of what we can offer our students. And we really do truly have to, you know, fight that good fight for them. I know that you'll sometimes get arguments on the other side that, you know, we need to have spaces, the girls and the boys as well. You know, some of the research 20, 30 years ago, that's what it was supporting. And some students do need a different space as well. So if we're able to find that middle ground to be more inclusive for all, but again, we are lifelong. We need to be lifelong passionate learners to model that behavior. But I really emphasize that we need to recognize, as like I said before, understanding what intersectionality is. I cannot say that enough times. I think we make assumptions that everybody understands what that is, because that makes a big difference in terms of recognizing that there's so many different pieces to our students and even to our staff. How do we move forward to make sure that we are truly meeting them where they're at with those many different pieces as well? So it is a bit of a challenge sometimes. Sometimes it isn't. You know, I went into the meeting last year around this time to have these discussions, and it went well. It went well. I had all the documentation. Everybody was very supportive. And, you know, we moved forward. We spoke to the guidance counselors ahead of time to let them know about what we were looking to asking them to offer. And they were great. So maybe we were one of the luckier ones, but we went in with the information in terms of what the students are saying and what the data is saying, and that letting everybody know that it's time to take action and provide them what they're looking for.
Wow. Thank you very much, Andrea. And I really appreciate that. And I think for our listeners, that takeaway of that, it starts with us, the individual, you know, recognizing that the things that not only we have to learn, but unlearn, and then having those open and honest conversations with our students.
Thanks for tuning in to today's show. We hope you enjoyed listening to All Gender Physical Education and Health from the PHE Canada podcast. Their podcast episodes are released on the third Tuesday of every month. Upcoming episodes will cover teaching sexual health, vaping, and land as pedagogy. We hope you'll give them a follow. Remember, the podcast will be back next month with a brand new episode, so keep your notifications on for updates. Please don't forget to share your favorite teacher stories with us as we gear up for Teacher Appreciation Week. Teachers don't always get to see the impact their words and actions have on their students. Whether it's been many years or happened more recently, this is an opportunity to express gratitude to those teachers who've made a difference in your life. Stay connected with us on both Instagram and Twitter at EveractiveAB or on Facebook at Everactive Schools. You can also visit us at everactive.org for more updates and ways to engage with our community. As always, special thanks to Matthew Wood for composing and performing our theme music. Until next time, the podcast is dismissed.